Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Cat Chat. We have a special bonus episode for you guys this month of October 2021, and it is with some of the amazing cast and the director of The Hidden Tiger, which is dropping on Tuesday, October 5th. It is an amazing documentary. These people are so generous, and they have provided us with some beautiful photography, cinematography. It's probably been, we've only done two episodes, but I'm loving this episode.
I mean, this is like episode 3000 for us, it seems like, with all the Carrie walkabouts. The documentary, you have to see it. It's unlike anything that we've watched. We watched it twice, and we're definitely going to put it in rotation with all the other things that we watched.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
What you are about to see is an interview with four amazing people that participated in this documentary that have a lot to say, and we want to give them the ability to say it. And for any of you that have followed us at Big Cat Rescue, or Carol, or, you know, Brittany, or anybody else at Big Cat Rescue, one of the things that we all talk about quite a bit is, you know, tigers should not be bred to live in cages. And
tigers should not live in cages.
Period. And ultimately, that's what happens. And you can hear from us all day long, and you can hear from Carol and everybody else. But until you hear it from these guys that are
in the thick of it.
I like to think that we're in the thick of it too, but
in a different way,
you know, these are the individuals that have been in the thick of it enough that they've taken the gloves off and said, we're just going to go ahead and work, and the heck with the protective, you know, gloves, so to speak, you know, let me get dirt under the fingernails. It's amazing. If you haven't taken the time to watch this thing, which if you're just listening to this now, you probably haven't yet.
Yeah, you won't be able to until Tuesday, October 5th.
Yeah, I think it's out on iTunes right now. And if you don't subscribe to Apple TV, then you can see it everywhere else on October 5th. And make it the thing to do. Show your family, gather everybody in one room, get the tissues together, because you will need them.
For good reasons. You'll need it for good reasons.
For good reasons. It's amazing. Yeah, I mean, if you think that we're screaming about the Big Cat Public Safety Act a lot, and by the way, pick up your phone, text CAST to 52886 and make that call. If you haven't done it yet, you're going to probably in about 15 minutes. Multiple times.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess without further ado, let's get into it.
The Hidden Tiger.
So we are currently joined with John Goodrich of Panthera. He is one of the cast members of the documentary Hidden Tiger. And John, we have just a couple of questions for you. We won't keep you too long because there's a lot of people we're going to be interviewing here. But one of the questions that we had was, what impact do captive tigers have on the lives of wild tigers?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I can talk a little bit about the impact that they do have, and just as importantly, the impact that they don't have. Because the impact that they don't have, a lot of people have the misconception that a lot of these captive breeding facilities and petting zoos somehow are related to and benefit tiger conservation. Well, they don't. Those tigers that are held in captivity like that are making no contribution whatsoever to the conservation of wild tigers. They're not fit to be reintroduced into the wild. These tigers are inbred, and many of them are not inbred, but outbred. They're mixed subspecies. And because of the way they were brought up in captivity, they just aren't suitable for release back into the wild. So all the claims that you hear that they are providing some benefit to conservation, and somehow that we have 5,000 captive tigers in the U.S. Is saving the species in the wild, that's not true at all. Where it actually hurts wild tiger conservation is one of the biggest threats right now to tigers in the wild is poaching. And tigers are poached, taken from the wild so that their body parts can be sold in traditional Asian medicine markets, so their hides can be sold to hang on people's walls. And so when you have all these captive populations and tigers are dying, at least some of those tigers are entering that black market and supporting that black market for tiger parts. We don't know to what extent that's happening in the US. We do know it's happening. There have been cases, but it's really important to ensure that none of these captive tigers are entering the black market and supporting the trade of wild tigers.
So I just want to make sure that I understand correctly. There are wild tigers that are, their parts are being sold in the United States, or is that just captive tigers that are being, their parts are being sold?
There are wild tigers. Obviously tigers only live in Asia. When they're being poached in Asia, their parts are being sold mostly in markets in Vietnam and China. But some of those parts do make it to the U.S. and are sold on black markets in the U.S. And it is such a great threat to tigers in the wild that there are, by some estimates, about translating that into square miles or That's acres right. we'll doesn't work for
it
me.
Under your image. But, we got you.
Yeah, a massive area of vacant tiger habitat. And it's vacant because the tigers have been poached out. It's good habitat. It's nice forest, but there are no tigers there because people have killed them.
And is that like habitat? Is that protected by that government, or is that just people have left it alone because they respect the tiger so much?
Some of both, but a lot of it is protected area. You know, in Laos and Cambodia and Vietnam. In Southeast Asia have a lot of protected area. I think Laos has something like 20% of their country in protected areas. And it used to be, it is fantastic tiger habitat, but there's no tigers there because they've been poached out.
Okay.
Can I feel that one?
Yeah, sure.
All right, cool. Now, Panthera, we've heard a lot about it here at Big Cat Rescue. And obviously, you know, to us, it's this massive, awesome facility, and you guys are doing just incredible work that we can only kind of dream of.
Thank you.
What is it that you do there, and then what is the, I guess, core drive behind what Panthera is doing?
So I am the chief scientist for Panthera, and I'm also the director of the Tiger Program, which is how I started in Panthera in 2012. So I've been doing conservation work and scientific research on tigers since 1995. That's pretty much all I've done since then. So in leading the tiger program at Panthera, I guess what our tiger program is focused on is increasing tiger numbers in the wild, recovering populations. You know, we're not trying to just maintain the status quo. We want to see more tigers out there. So the way we do that is we try to choose the best sites that are out there where tiger numbers are depressed, and usually that's because of poaching, figure out why tiger numbers are depressed, and then do the work that needs to be done to counter those threats, which is usually anti-poaching patrols, but also working with local communities, trying to help them live with tigers and solve human-tiger conflicts.
Do you find that there is a positive relationship between the citizens, or, you know, the people living within those or near those tiger communities and the tigers themselves? Or do you find that there's sort of a stigma or like a negative feeling towards the tiger? Like, they're dangerous, they're scary, they consume or, you know, kill off our livestock. What do you find the relationship to be between the people and the animal?
Yeah, it really varies depending on what country you're in. But to generalize across all of Tiger Range, I would say it's kind of a love-hate relationship. You know, everybody loves tigers, right? And even if you're living with them and worried about you or your children getting eaten by one or losing your cows to a tiger, you still have to kind of love them. And in general, people do. But at the same time, when they are in your backyard, and I can speak from experience because I've lived for 15 years in Russia where I literally had tigers walk through my backyard, it becomes a bit of a different situation. And if tigers are having an impact on your livelihood by killing your livestock or things like that, then, you know, and if you're really poor and worried about feeding your children tomorrow, which fortunately I've never been in that situation, but a lot of people in Tiger Range states are, Losing a cow to a tiger can make or break you, you know, and all of a sudden you may not have the way to make money to feed your children tomorrow. So it is a really big deal, and that has a very significant impact on people. But that's a problem that we can and do work with and solve successfully.
All right. That I would be interested to know what it would be like to have a tiger walk through my backyard. I feel like it would be similar incredible. To having a bear walk through your backyard.
I would scream like a child if a bear walked through the yard. If a tiger walked through the yard, it'd probably be like a Bugs Bunny cartoon. My clothes would still be standing there, and I'd be gone. So when it comes to conservation, what's one of your biggest wishes for conservation with these cats?
I guess my biggest wish is for the world to get behind conservation. You know, most of the animals that we're trying to protect, and tigers specifically, they do great if you leave them alone. Tigers are prolific breeders. We know what we need to do to protect them and what they need in order to survive, and not just survive, in order to thrive. So conservation is really more about getting people to do the right thing than it is about the animals themselves. And so if we can just get the world behind protecting tigers, stop poaching them, stop destroying their habitat, develop wisely. It's not that we can't develop, we need to develop wisely in ways that doesn't impact tigers and biodiversity in general. Getting the world behind that and to understand that and to do that is my biggest wish, and probably what I spend the most of my time trying to do or trying to make happen.
Do you think that by eliminating cubs and the pay to play trade here in the United States, there is a greater potential for the people to get the humans of this planet to get behind conservation in the wild? Or do you think that one has an impact on the other?
I do think that in the US and around the world, really, these commercial captive breeding of cats, whether it's for petting zoos or whether it's for lions to produce for canned hunting in South Africa, does have a significant impact on conservation in the wild. And it creates a lot of misconceptions and puts forth a lot of misinformation about the conservation of wild cats. When somebody goes to a petting zoo to take selfies with tiger cubs and they're told that this is a good thing for conservation, that person walks away feeling like, okay, I've done my good deed for tigers for the day. Well, they haven't.
Yeah.
And then beyond that, you know, you think about the millions of dollars that the public spends on petting zoos, and beyond that on the types of things that Big Cat Rescue has to do because of that. If that money went into conservation of wildcats, we could be doing our job so much better.
Yeah, it's those people that tell you that you're the money that you're spending is going towards conservation. They're very good at their jobs. They are very slick, and they can think on their feet, and they make you feel like you're doing a really great thing. But ultimately, once you learn what's actually happening and what's happened, there's sort of this sinking dread that sets in, and you're just I've all outwardly spoken before to all of our followers and our fans that I before I knew about Big Cat Rescue, and before I knew about conservation, and before I knew about the cub petting, I paid to have a tiger cub, you know, photo taken with the tiger cub. And after I learned what I had done, immediately the sense of just ick and dread set in, and I felt like I needed to get the word out that what people are telling you is a lie. It's just an all out lie, and it's a money grab.
Yeah.
There's nothing more to it. There's no conservation value. There is nothing involved that's good for these cubs or the mothers that are birthing these cubs. It's just a bold faced money grab.
Yeah. And then when you learn that little cub becomes sort of worthless, if you will, but when it's an adult and ends up someplace like Big Cat Rescue, where you take care of them and have to spend thousands or I don't know how much you spend per tiger per year to feed them, but I assume it's probably $10,000 or more per year.
Yes.
And it just becomes a burden on society to have these rescue centers like yours to do that. And you know, if those funds could be spent on wild tigers, if there weren't this need generated for doing what you have to do, we could be making a much bigger difference.
Yeah, I do have one question. When it comes to getting people just, let's say Big Cat Public Safety Act, it passes, goes into effect. What would be your thought of getting people to move the funds from, you know, ooh, I can touch the cat, to now I know I'm doing something right? Or do you feel that people just naturally do that?
To some degree, people will naturally do that. You know, a lot of these people very sincerely want to be helping conservation of wild tigers. Others really just want a selfie with a cub, right? And maybe those people that will lose. But I think it's our job, my job, your job, to educate people that if they do want to help conserve tigers in the wild, that they need to be giving money to organizations that do that rather than paying money to have a selfie with a tiger.
All right.
Well, we've got one last question, and this one's a little bit lighter. And because we are Cat Chat with Big Cat Rescue, we just always are curious whether or not our guests have any domestic cats that they live with. If so, how many? What are their names? And if they are nearby and interested in being on camera, we are totally okay with that. So if you have any domestic cats that you share a life or home with, we'd love to hear about them. Very, you know.
Yeah, sorry. that's an easy one for me to answer. I don't. My daughter's allergic to cats, so.
Oh no! I'm sorry to hear that.
It happens. I'm allergic.
You are. I just forced them on you anyway. I was like, just there's Zyrtec for you.
And we have like seven.
We do.
well, we saw the hidden tiger. It was amazing. You got some great work. So thank you very much for your time, John. We really do appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having me. I appreciate it as well. It was nice to meet you both.
You are very welcome to hang out if you'd like. But
yeah,
you know,
feel free to hang out. Otherwise, if you got stuff to do, we'll catch up with you.
No, I got to move on to the next meeting.
Thank you so much for your time. We appreciate you being here.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
Sure. Bye.
Yes. Hello. How are you?
Hi, Kirsten. Good, how good. Are you?
Hi, thanks so much for having me. Great to see you.
Thank you Absolutely. So much for joining us. Welcome to Cat Chat with Big Cat Rescue. I am Bridget. This is my husband, Andy. A little bit about us, just in case. I think based on what I saw in the documentary, you were at Big Cat Rescue.
I've had the privilege to go to Big Cat Rescue, but I work in DC with the International Fund for Animal Welfare.
Excellent. Excellent. So I'm a senior keeper at Big Cat Rescue. So I take care of all of our large cats and smaller. Andy is a senior partner. So he does kind of behind the scenes, a lot of tech stuff, as you can see here. So we're both very Big Cat Rescue. They didn't just give us the shirt and be like, here you go. We worked. Carol snuck us in here. So
she snuck us in
under the radar.
So Carson, what do you do over there at the International Fund for Animal Welfare?
Yeah, so I work on a number of policy campaigns, including the Big Cat Public Safety Act, working to improve federal policy here in DC to protect animals both across the US and in the wild globally. And I've had the great privilege to work alongside, like I said, Big Cat Rescue, including with Carol and Howard when they're here in town.
Excellent. Excellent. Oh, that I, so you kind of go all over the country to different exotic cat sanctuaries or big cat sanctuaries and kind of work with them on getting that Big Cat Public Safety Act kind of going through.
Yeah. So there's a fantastic network of sanctuaries called the Big Cat Sanctuary Alliance. And it was formed to really ensure effective and efficient collaboration in the course of doing on the ground rescues. But as it's evolved, a lot of our partner sanctuaries, again, with the leadership of Big Cat Rescue, have really gotten engaged in saying that we want your help, members of Congress, our representatives in DC, we want your help to ensure that these animals no longer encounter these exploitative circumstances and are no longer abused as photo props and pets.
Very cool.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of the messaging that we've heard, you know, from yourself while we were doing research, and then also from basically everybody that's around you, even like Carol, the message is pretty much the same. It's pass this bill, let's move on with our lives, let's get this done and over with. And we, I mean, I know Bridget and I, we preach about it over the past however many years we've been doing this. And then when we were watching the documentary and you said what you said, the light, I mean, it was just like, oh my gosh, there's more people on this planet that are screaming the same thing. This is absolutely incredible. So what do you got next?
Well, we're trying not to give too much away about the documentary. So yeah, we're keeping it under wraps because this podcast is going to drop before the documentary does drop, but
exactly. If anybody is listening or watching this right now, watch the documentary.
Oh my gosh.
It's better than looking at it.
Do it. Carson is in it. She's fabulous. She has a lot of really great knowledge. She's very well spoken. All of the people were just wonderful, but all of the cast were just amazing. And you had some really great points to make towards the, you know, in the documentary, which again, you guys will have to watch. in order to see what we're talking about.
To be fair, I don't know how much of a spoiler it is to tell people that, you know, don't get pet tigers.
I mean, yeah, that's
it's a bad idea.
Yeah, I believe that's one of the big messages of the documentary. Not to give too much away again. But can you give us a little bit of information about what the relationship or potentially lack thereof between CITES and Chinese tiger farms would be? Because there is the mention of China and those Chinese tiger farms a little bit. There's a little kind of blurb about that in the documentary. So I kind of wanted to see what your feeling was about that.
Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you so much for that. So a lot of it has to do with the US's influence in the world and what it means when we advocate for conservation and the protection of wildlife globally. When we look to other countries, including those countries that have more formal tiger farms and say, please stop farming tigers, because we know it's driving this international trade that's in turn threatening wild populations, we don't really have any credibility. It's something where we need to clean up our side of the street if we want to set a good example in terms of global conservation and maintain our positive influence on wild populations of tigers.
So how does CITES kind of play into that? Was it just that that's sort of the conglomerate of being like, hey, we're a group, we're coming together as a group? I don't know that we have a lot of members or followers that are worldwide, so I'm not sure that they may be familiar with CITES.
Yeah, that's a great question. So CITES is the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species. And really in the US, our key implementing mechanism for CITES, which is a global agreement among a large number of countries that are working together to protect wildlife, our key implementing tool here in the US, or one of them at least, is the US Endangered Species Act. And because all subspecies of tigers are imperiled, they're protected under the US Endangered Species Act, and their trade is restricted under CITES. I can't claim to be a CITES expert, but that is a tool by which countries around the world aim to do their part to protect big cats that are imperiled in the wild, including tigers.
So in the documentary, like again, China and Laos are mentioned and India are mentioned. And so those would also be, those countries would be included, you know, under the CITES umbrella, or?
I believe that's the case. I apologize. I can't claim to be an expert in CITES, but
that's
yeah,
okay.
It's that both range countries and non-range countries collaborate to ensure that they're not, or to try to avoid facilitating the trade in imperiled species as well as their parts and products.
Gotcha. Okay.
All right. When it comes to conservation and and with the film and how impactful that was. And again, people watch it. If you're listening, get on that. Just click the button. When it comes to all that with conservation and the importance of tigers just being in the wild, what would be your wish? What's your desire? Let's say the Big Cat Public Safety Act comes along, it passes. After you have the big party and all that fun stuff, and your headache is gone after 3 weeks, laboring over this for years, what would you like to see happen?
So if I can once again praise the work that Big Cat Rescue has done, I think I can't remember if it was Howard or Carol, probably both have said this to me, that their goal is to put themselves out of business.
Yeah.
And I feel the same, you know, that I hope eventually there isn't a need to rescue captive big cats and provide them with lifetime care, because of course they can't be put into the wild once they've been raised in captivity. This is of course a secondary objective. The most important thing right now is enacting the Big Cat Public Safety Act. But secondary to that, I encourage consumers to try and make better choices. And to the extent they've made bad ones, don't beat yourself up, just do better moving forward. We see all the time that exhibits that promote cub handling, direct contact with big cats, and other problematic behaviors are really taking advantage of people who care about those animals and who want to be near them for that very reason. And so, of course, we urge people to call their members of Congress. Please, please call your members of Congress and urge them to support the Big Cat Public Safety Act. But also, you know, send a message to your friends and family on social media. If you've taken that tiger selfie, maybe take it down and explain why you did that, or explain how you're going to do better moving forward. And so we, of course, need this federal collective action from Congress, but we can all take little steps to do better.
It sounds like, obviously, you've put a lot of time into a lot of this, and you've made a career out of it, and you love these cats. So why tigers? What makes you love tigers so much?
That's an excellent question for which I had a more well thought out answer. I think like a lot of charismatic wildlife, there's just something about them. You know, the fact that of course that there are so few in the wild that probably most of us will never see one in the wild, and perhaps that's best, but knowing that they're there, knowing about the critical role they play in maintaining ecosystem health, and seeing the moments of joy that are expressed by these animals. I know that's not the scientific term, but when they've been rescued and you see them in a place like Big Cat Rescue and our other partner sanctuaries, where they receive quality lifetime care, and they're playing and they're just doing things that show the enjoyment in their lives. And again, I hope there will come a time when they're not in those cages, but the time being, I think that's a great source of relief in the midst of a difficult project, which is trying to end this horrible trade.
I'll let you get the last question.
Oh, you're getting me. I'm gonna grab the tissue. I mean, these are the things that I dream about, and these are the things that keep me moving forward, you know, after the heartbreak and the loss. And, you know, there were some very impactful moments in the documentary where I got done watching it and I was like, okay, I'm reinvigorated. I'm ready to just keep fighting this battle of protection of tigers, both, you know, captive and wild. And it just, so, you know, when people say the things that I'm feeling and they don't realize that that's necessarily how I'm feeling, when you have that shared connection, it's a really beautiful moment to kind of be connected to humans, to other humans who feel this way.
Absolutely.
So that was a very powerful moment. So thank you for that. And we don't always need scientific language here. I grew up with a father who taught science, but every once in a while, it's okay to have the emotional, emotional words. Real quick before we let you go, because we've got Tim on here next. Before we let you go, we are Cat Chat here with Big Cat Rescue. So we have a question. We have kind of a lighter question for you. Do you have any domestic cats that you live with? And if so, how many? And what are their names? And if they're willing to be on camera, we're okay with that too.
So I do not have any cats now. Unfortunately, my building doesn't allow it. But I have, my parents have a cat with whom I've established a very intense sibling rivalry. and I got into this world kind of when I adopted a cat that I creatively named Kitty when I was a little kid. So I certainly have taken inspiration from my domestic cats of the past.
Awesome. Miss Carson, thank you so much for joining us. We greatly appreciate your time, your effort, your energy, everything that you have put into this documentary, into helping us with tiger conservation in the wild and helping us get that Big Cat Public Safety Act passed, which we are really hoping for. So we're keeping our fingers crossed that that will happen sometime in the very near future.
Thank you so much for having me, and thanks for all your amazing work.
Thank you, Carson. We appreciate it.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye. Bye.
All right, so we have Tim Harrison here with Outreach for Animals. Welcome to the show, Tim. Thank you so much for joining us. We seem to be having, technology is great when it works, but yeah. We've learned now in 2021 how to bypass non-working technology and figure out how to make it work. So
come on, exactly right. All the time.
Make this thing work. Right. So Tim, we just got a couple quick questions for you. And that's really it. So a quick shot in the arm. So we both had a chance to watch a documentary. By the way, my name's Andy. This is my wife Bridget.
Hi.
Obviously with Big
Cat
Rescue. Hi, Tim.
Yeah.
The documentary is great. You had some incredible things to say. At one point in time, you actually made me cry.
You moved me to tears as well.
Which is an impossible thing.
It's harder for him. It's easier for me.
Yeah.
When
she looks over on the couch and I have tears coming down my face because the other bearded gentleman on TV said something impactful. Next thing you know, I'm hiding in the bathroom, sobbing. So thank you for that. But moving forward, yeah, Bridge came up with some awesome questions here. So Bridge, take it away.
I have to give some of these questions. I have to give credit for some of these questions to Michael. But Tim, at some point in your previous life, you were a person who had exotic animals as you owned them as someone who owned animals. Is that exotic animals? Is that correct?
Yes, I never bought an animal in my life. I grew up on a farm, and what it was is I'd rescue a tiger, and there was no place for me to take it. As you saw in the first documentary we did, The Elephant in the Living Room, there was no place. I couldn't get animals anywhere at that time. There was just no place to trustworthy or for them to go. So whatever I captured loose or in somebody's basement or corn crib, I kept. And then I would try to find homes for them for people that had, kind of half-ass sanctuaries, weren't really, really respectable at times, but I had to find places for them to go. And it was really sad at that time, but a lot of them were put down.
Oh, that's a jersey. So
that's awful. I'm sorry. As someone who
horrifying. Why do you think we started a nonprofit, Outreach for Animals? It was cops and firemen, because we're tired of having to see it happen.
Were you they referenced Zanesville, the Zanesville massacre in the documentary. And it's something that at Big Cat Rescue we know about and talk about openly because it is one of the most horrifying moments in our nation's history regarding the private ownership and death of big cats, of exotic cats. Was that a moment in your, what was the moment of, for you, of your aha moment? Like, I really need to start talking more about conservation and tigers in the wild, as opposed to, the private ownership of exotic cats here in the United States. Cause there's that, for some of us, there's that shift where we think, there's no big deal. It's fine. Tigers in captivity in the United States. And then you realize there needs to be that push towards conservation. So what was your aha moment with that?
Well, there was a lot of aha moments that I kind of overlooked because I was thinking I was doing the right thing. I was teaching conservation, but nobody was listening. They were looking at the python in my hand. They were looking at the tiger on the leash. They weren't listening to what my message was. I was saying, let's be part of the environment. Let's leave them in the wild. And nobody was listening. They were still Steve Irwin's and the Austin Stevens Snake Masters and all those people on Jack Hanna's. Those were the ones that people leaned towards because that was the monkey see, monkey do thing. They wanted to imitate what their heroes were. So I thought that was the only way to educate the public using the victims I just caught off the streets of Dayton, Indianapolis, all the way up to Michigan, Pennsylvania. And it didn't work. It didn't work. In fact, I was on a national TV show with a tiger cub. As I finished the show, nobody heard what I said. None of the cameramen, nobody did. All they wanted to do was get their picture taken with the tiger cub. I even asked, they brought their kids with them, and I asked them, what was the message I told you? Oh, all I know is tigers are cute. Okay, you didn't get the message. Everybody wants a tiger cub. Nobody wants a tiger. No, all they saw was the tiger cub, me in a jungle hat, and me out there walking with a tiger cub, and they wanted to imitate it. Monkey see monkey. Now we got colleges doing that, working with that now across the world, that syndrome, I call it, that we have here in the United States. But you got to remember, though, when the Zanesville massacre happened, that was international. I was interviewed. I was actually there. I was interviewed all over the world, TV Tokyo, Australia, France, everywhere. And every time I'm interviewed on Zoom, just recently here in England, first question asked was about Zanesville. That's even over my book and the movie and everything else was coming out. So it's still a hot topic. I teach at Disaster City out of Texas A&M College, where we teach responders how to respond to natural man-made disasters. I still bring up, because every community has had something small like this happen, tiger loose, cougar in somebody's basement, somebody attacked. As we know, you work at Big Cat Rescue, you know the statistics. Oh, yeah. And the thing is, we don't get them all, but you get them from the paramedics, which I work with. You get them from the fire chiefs, because they're the ones on the scene, right? Get them from the emergency room doctors who work with Outreach for Animals now. So there's no box to check that your daughter had been attacked by your pet tiger, because you don't have to have tags or license or anything for a tiger, but you have to have one for a dog. So if your house cat scratches you, you have to have 3 inches of paperwork to do with the combined health district, and the cat has to be quarantined. It has to be have vaccination tags. These big cats are walking zoonotic disasters. So when Zanesville happened, when that was turned loose, I started teaching that was the largest terrorist event ever in the history of mankind, where somebody used walking, thinking IEDs and hazardous material, even though these animals, I love the animals, but you got to understand when they're loose into a community, as we knew with one of the monkeys had a virus that was very contagious, and they were going to shoot it. I had to talk them out of shooting it, because if it shot it and didn't kill it, it's going to run all over the neighborhood. So yes, it was, there's a lot of aha moments, but my biggest one is like in the conservation game, when a young man actually imitated me and died. And that was when I stopped taking animals out. It was Ted Dries, a construction worker, and he was handling a 15-foot python by himself with his girlfriend and constricting. It's in the movie, The Conservation Game, and that story rocked my world quite a bit. But I was on my way out of using animals already. That just slammed the door shut. And then when I went to Africa the first time with a zoo wanted me to come over and help them with, security. And I used to go all over the world doing security and paramedic stuff because I was a snake bite expert. So I got to go free to a lot of expeditions. But when I got over there, I actually saw the first time a giraffe running, actually physically running on the Serengeti. I just took a giraffe out of somebody's apartment in a garage next to his apartment in Troy, Ohio. So I'm looking at this giraffe with its neck stooped down, atrophied, probably for another 30 years. And over here is this beautiful giraffe running with its mane flying. And I'm thinking, this is ridiculous. We don't need this in the United States of America. This is outrageous. And the biggest victims are the cats. But then we go around, circle that victims. You got the people that bought the cats. You got the family that was involved. You got all the neighbors. You got all the public safety. You got all the citizens. With Zanesville, everybody that watched that show, everybody that saw that was touched. So they've never been the same after that. You said you watched the documentary. You're not going to be the same after it, And I had one gentleman tell me, say, listen, people get these animals when they go to, he was a gentleman from the zoo. He said, when you put that tiger cub in your hand, you're changed for life. You're chemically changed. Your morphins pop and you want to help that animal and everything else. And I said, did you ever watch a BBC show like Blue Planet? And you ever watch it? Did your morphins pop on the screen? He goes, what kind? And I said, what about when you just watched The Conservation Game? He goes, yeah, that was bigger than holding the tiger cub. I said, absolutely. You don't need to put a cat in your hand, abuse it, so you can be happy for the rest of your life.
What about tigers do you love most? Like what, why tigers?
Tigers, I have a lot of animals. I like all animals. I like all people too. I'm a human animal advocate. I'm probably the only one on the planet. But I do like the humans. You have to have the humans. If you can't change the humans, you ain't going to change anything with the animals. So I like tigers because tigers are the largest predatory cat, and they're a symbol. They're a symbol, especially with my new book, White Magic, Curse of the White Tiger, I just came out. I talk about the white tiger being the symbol of power and everything else and everybody beauty and all this. And it is not, it's actually a mutant. The white tiger is. So I look at these animals. Yeah, I look at them and I go, how do we put in our minds that this is the biggest, most powerful cat in the world, a perfect killing machine? Where does it say this makes a good pet? I don't see that written anywhere. And somehow that connection we have in the United States has kind of flipped, where if you go to the country they come from, I don't, you know, I have been over to Nepal, I've been to India, I've been to the Tiger Project. I don't remember any of them over there saying, I want to keep one as a pet. They were more keep their distance from it. And you'll see in The Elephant in the Living Room, our first documentary, Dr. Roger Pahulka, 6 months in Africa, 6 months in the United States, last 33 years. He said, I have not had a tiger attack or a venomous snake attack in Africa, but I've had numerous in Dayton, Ohio. So you think of a different mentality-wise there. So tigers to me are the ultimate, I mean, the poster child, you know, especially the white tigers. And the tigers are the poster child for abuse. Yeah. And for misunderstanding what conservation really is. It's not conservation, it's conservation. And we got to stop this mentality where people are making millions and billions of dollars off the backs of these cats.
So when, as we talk about conservation and because the premise of, without giving too much away, because the premise of the hidden tiger is so ingratiated into conservation, what is your one wish for conservation?
I think the one wish is for people to be able to be part of their environment, not an obnoxious outsider, not somebody stomping through the interior screaming, "Crikey, danger, danger, danger." Oh, and they're yelling at the top of their lungs, they're stomping and they're pouncing on everything. They're wrestling everything. When I do my PowerPoint presentations for colleges, I capture a 16-foot python that was out front of a restaurant in downtown Dayton. Nobody was going in to eat. The owner didn't understand why. Well, there was a snake out there, huge snake. So I get there with Station 11 Fire Department. We pull it out. What's the first thing the kids say? The college kids say, "Why is it not trying to bite you?" I said, "Because I like it. I don't want it to bite me. I have to really piss off that snake to get it to bite me." I do the opposite, and that's the same with tigers. You watch all these groups, these fantastic groups with the Big Cat Sanctuary Alliance, 90% of the cats are walked into traveling cages. Big Cat Rescue does it, they all do it, you know? You walk them in instead of having to dart a lot of them, you know? Because these cats, if you show them a little bit of slowing down, relaxing, calming things down, these cats don't wanna be angry, they don't wanna attack you. These animals on TV, you have to actually, to get a crocodile to attack you, you have to really upset it to come after you. And I, you know, I've been there. I've rescued these animals. We don't have to do this. And that's what I like about, I want these people to change about conservation, not being obnoxious outsiders, but part of the environment, not man versus nature, as we actually have a show called that on TV, or man versus pumas, or man versus tiger. You've seen it, it's on Animal Planet, it's on all the shows. Everybody's versing stuff and they're fighting and they're wrestling. You have to wrestle a gator, you gotta wrestle this, you have to wrestle anything. You just have to become part of the environment. Remember who we are. We're part of this environment. We're part of this conservation too. And as soon as we take that human aspect out of it and turn it into Tarzan and all this other garbage, we lost it. We've lost it, and it's, look how hard it is to bring it back. You know, it's all the way back from when my dad was a kid. Frank Buck, bring him back alive. Watch those old black and white things back in the 1940s. It's exactly the same as the shows on Animal Planet in 1940.
You mentioned just a little bit ago about, you know, the amount of tigers in the U.S. You've mentioned, you know, conservation over in India, Nepal, and everywhere that you've traveled. And I think you might actually be able to answer this question better than anybody that we've spoken with so far. Why the United States? Why did this situation ever come about in the first place? You know, we look at China, they have their reasons of medicinal X, Y, and Z, and we all know, you know, none of that is correct. But why did this happen here? And why won't people give it up?
I say, you know, this is what I've been saying for years, is that we're so far away from our environment. We are so far away from, if we go walk in the park, we think we've done something. Right? We actually think, ooh, I'm part of the environment. No, you're not. You're just baby stepping into it. We are so far away from understanding what a frog does. We're so far away. Perfect example, a junior high class. I was there teaching the stuff about, you know, man being part of nature instead of a noxious outsider. And just like we're talking about, we are the kind of people that want to do whatever we want. We want our liberties. We want our freedoms. We should be able to own anything we want. And that's our downfall, because that's when it comes back. With these kids, we went down on a trip down to the nature center, and the teacher took down, they saw a northern water snake on a rock. This is Senator Sunny. It yawns. Well, they don't yawn because they're sleepy. They yawn to relax their jaw because they're going to go hunt. So the teacher said, let's do what Tim said. Let's just sit here and watch for a second. That snake went in the water, caught a frog, constricted it, and ate it right in front of the kids. Snake didn't even know they existed, right? And these kids, you ought to see the emails I got from those kids. That's the difference between going to Nepal, where the kids are showing me that, where I'm showing the kids here in the United States. Isn't that sick? It should be the teachers. It should be starting at first grade. It should be in kindergarten. It should be from parents. Instead of going, hey, let's watch Steve Irwin, click. Let's watch these shows where we're abusing animals and use them for entertainment. Let's watch a show like BBC's, you know, Blue Planet, something like that, and then explain what's going on, how you can be part of the environment without being an obnoxious outsider. But yeah, we have a bad track record here. Just like I said with Frank Buck, all the way back, Bring Him Back Alive, all these crazy wacko shows, even we got all the way up into the, Marty Stauffer, remember Wild America? Well, he got pulled off the air because he's abusing animals, right? So the sick part about that, it's there's no way to continue what they're doing without killing animals in the process of filming or abusing them. And that's the sad part. We got to stop that entertainment mentality and get back to saying, hey, like I said, when they brought me on, the carpet, they wanted me to do a series, numerous stations did, a TV series. After the first documentary, I sat down, I said, let me ask you a question. I'm gonna tell you what it is. It was National Geographic Channel. I sat down with them and I said, and they said, don't we do all this marvelous stuff? They'll pay me this and do this. I said, no. Do you have one show on your air? One show that you come up and there's a snake, or you come up and there's a tiger over here, and you say, let's just leave it alone. Let's watch it. No, we got to go get it. We got to dart it. We got to put a transmitter on it. Remember Robin Williams? Always remember him. He says, there's still cheetahs over there waiting for National Geographic to come back again. Man, I need another hit. Because they do the same research every year. Why? Why do you have to dart the same cheetahs over and over again? Okay, that's because you're getting a grant. So we got to stop this madness. And you know, the native people over there, the people that live over there, are laughing at us.
Oh, yeah.
Trust me on that. They're laughing at us because we don't get it. And it's real easy to get. It just has to start when you're young. It took me a while to get kicked in the head a few times to realize what it truly is. And I learned it from my grandkids. I've learned it from my nephews. And get all emotional. My nephews and nieces. But you learn it the hard way. So I don't want everybody else to have to go through the same thing I did. I don't want to have to see the deaths I've seen. I don't want to have to see, and the animal abuse. It's just outrageous. And I always tell people, if you just spend 3 days with me, you will never again, ever want to put a tiger cub on your lap again.
Yeah. All right.
Oh, all right. So we've got one last question for you, Tim, and we're going to lighten it up a little bit here. We've been asking everybody, do you have any domestic cats that you live with? If so, how many, and are they interested in being on camera with you?
Well, I actually don't have any cats in the house because my wife is allergic to them, sadly. She loves them. We take care of 4 cats. I can't say they don't come in. They do come in. She's rather not tell her parents that they come in because she's very allergic to them. But we have a Siamese cat that might as well just be ours. Comes over, plays with the grandkids, comes upstairs. But they're not in the house right now because my dog's in the house right now. We have a rescued poodle over here that she's not mentally right, but I love it. You know, the more bizarre, the better. That's my second rescue dog that I had too. So yeah, we got about 4 rescued cats that wander around. And we've got a bunch of other animals out there that people, our neighbors bring over. Tim, can you help? We can't seem to get this off his paw, you know, and can you do this? And I said, yeah, because I have a little bit of a magic with him over all the 47 years of working with animals. But I want to say something too before we quit about the hidden tiger. I was so proud to be a part of that. That's one heck of a documentary. And the one thing is, these people are passionate. These are passionate people that love what they're doing, and they did a beautiful job. And the one thing too is that people don't understand it. You've got to have the whole story. The whole story has to be told. I told a part of the story in the conservation game. I told another part, a major part of the story in The Elephant in the Living Room. The Hidden Tiger puts the tiger story together. It puts what's going on here, and unbelievable shots. You know, I've been to Nepal.
Oh, it's gorgeous. Holy smokes.
And I've been over India. Yes, look at you. I'm the same way. I actually takes my breath away. And I saw some of the stuff when they first got there. I probably shouldn't talk about it. They showed me on their phone, and it was like the mama tiger just walking right up to them. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, how many years it takes some people from the BBC and other places just to get that kind of shot. These guys are blessed. They did a fan, and guys and girls, and they're blessed. They did a fantastic job. I tell everybody to watch this documentary because, you know, yeah, watch the conservation game, watch the Elephant Living Room. Yeah, watch, that's the United States of America. But you got a little taste of that in the Hidden Tiger. What else did you get? You got where they're supposed to be. That's what I love. You got tigers in the wild, and look at the difference between those tigers in Nepal and India, and the tigers are in the cages here in the United States of America. Just the structure of their bodies, the look in their eyes. You know what I'm talking about. The look in their eyes, man. It's amazing.
Yeah. For those of you that are going to be listening to this podcast instead of watching it, I'm actually like kind of getting choked up and emotional as Tim references the cinematography and the photos of this documentary. They are just,
it was gorgeous,
astonishing, really, and breathtaking, and it is worth every minute that you get to sit, and you just sit, you don't talk, you don't blink, you just sit, and you just,
it's 47 breathtaking moments.
It is unbelievable.
Absolutely. And when I have a grandson named Kawhi, and he has a tendency to kind of want to play with his game while he's watching movies, he watched that footage over in India and Nepal nonstop, did not look down at his game. And that's the biggest compliment I can give anybody. Tell you all, you guys, that's the biggest compliment I can tell you, is my grandson looked up from his game and watched that entire segment that they filmed over there. And even when Val was talking too, he liked Val's voice. You know, you have to be foolish to do this. I'm like, this man is brilliant. I love him. He is right on target. Yes. He caught the kids. They love listening to him.
Yes. That, I mean, there's so many moments in the documentary that are just so vital to our humanity, because it talks about, and that, again, not to give too much away, but it talks about the conservation of the wild tiger. So Tim, we appreciate you so much for being here with us.
Yeah, thanks a ton.
Thank you so much for your time, and for, you know, everything you've done for, you know, exotic cats, both, you know, here in the United States, but also in the wild. So thank you for everything you've done for conservation and for tigers. And we look forward to maybe getting together with you again sometime.
Oh, anytime you want. I will speak to anybody that's worthwhile. I get a ton of people that want me to talk to them, you know, just get on podcasts, but it's a joke. You know, I don't stay on a joke podcast. When somebody gets on and starts joking and having fun, I tell them, I'm sorry, I appreciate you having me on, I'm out of here. But I do, my wife does a really good job of going through it. But anything Carol's on, I'll be on, trust me on that too.
Thank you so much for your time, Tim. We appreciate you. Have a wonderful evening, and we'll catch up with you again.
All right, thank you, stay safe.
Thanks, you too.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
There you are. Okay. All right. So here it is. This is the pièce de résistance. This is Michael Semtesto. Thank you. Producer, director of The Hidden Tiger. You guys, this is the man who has gotten the ball rolling with this documentary. He is the brains behind this operation, and we have some serious questions for this guy, and I am very excited about this. You look a little shell-shocked.
Yeah, that's not quite fair. So there's a lot of people involved in the film, so I can't, it takes a big team to put together a film like this. Got fantastic partners, and it's been a long time coming. It's hard to believe it's finally going to be out there in the world and people are going to see it. And I want to say, first of all, to thank you guys, because Carol and Howard were involved in the film, and Big Cat rescue was involved very, very early on. And we filmed there many, many times at the same time that other Tiger documentary was filming. And of course, who knew how that would turn out? So it's cool to get this. It's really cool to get, you know, basically we're saying it, we're able to tell the story of the true Tiger kings and queens of conservation. So,
and for that, I have to say that I am grateful. I'll be honest, when, you know, anytime someone's like, oh, there's another Tiger documentary, there's this part of me that's like, I don't want to do this again. I don't want to go through this. It was all very icky the last time, but
yeah,
you know, I sat and I watched, we've watched it twice, and both times I'm just like, yes, finally, this is what we needed.
It definitely brought that, it brought the message that needed to be heard. You know, it seemed like the other one that we're referring to, went in that direction for 10 minutes and then whew,
yeah,
somewhere else, but
major left turn.
I have one.
That said though, so yeah, you know, there was positive blowback from the documentary too. Is, you know, yes, John Goodridge and a lot of the NGOs that are involved in the film were really busy taking calls because all of a sudden there was a lot of interest in tigers, and so it gave you know, really great NGOs the chance to get some media time and tell the true story. So you know, while it was a disappointment, certainly for Big Cat Rescue. Oh. And a lost opportunity for a conservation message, it did open up a larger dialogue, which I think is great. So we'll trade on Carol's popularity all day long, so that we can help get more people to see this film.
I think she might be in her office watching and listening right now. Yeah.
She's already been very generous in the past. So thank you guys for that. Sorry.
Absolutely.
No, thank you.
No, I have to completely agree with that. You know, we saw a very interesting side of it where, you know, the docuseries came out, we saw a side of it that we didn't like at all for a while. But then as time passed, you know, we started to hear people ask about the cats and, you know, how they could help and what they could do, because it seemed like the switches were clicking. It just took a while to make it happen. And I think, you know, the Hidden Tigers coming out at just the right time.
Yeah, I think I know where you're going with this, is that, you know, people are asking the questions and now the Hidden Tiger can answer those questions for them in this beautiful cinematic, you know, film. It gives more information, it gives a different perspective, but you know, an accurate one.
Yeah, so
I like to think we made a documentary for smart people and don't assume that people are unintelligent and can't handle, you know, one of the issues that we first came across when we started getting into the film is we'd ask, you know, how do we end, you know, what do we do to save the tiger? And, you know, and there's no silver bullet. It is a wildly complicated issue that there's so much going against the existence of wild tigers. You can't just, you know, and we would frustrate conservationists and environmentalists because it's not one soundbite. It's so many things. And so, you know, we tried to tell a pretty complete story, but again, 48 minutes, you know, people like John Goodrich, Val McThapar, Belinda, you know, they've spent their life crusading for tigers, and there's still so much to be done. Still, you know, as Valmik said in the film, there's still so much to be learned. Every time you are out in the wild, you learn something new. And hopefully, you know, that's sort of a side effect of the film, is that people get more encouraged to go out and be a part of nature instead of living their existence in the inside.
So was there a specific example or an inciting incident that drove you to this documentary or gave you the idea for the documentary?
Yeah, so my partner in this, Josh Gildrey, we had just finished making two dog documentaries, and the world of dog rescue, I should say, companion pet rescue, because there were cats as well in both films, or at least in both films. So we were really immersed in that world. It's something I'd done for a long time. I'd been involved in dog rescue. And, you know, as you know, the world of dog and cat rescue is pretty fascinating and gets some really exotic characters. So we thought, well, maybe we should look at, I wonder what the world, you know, if the, you know, dog rescue people are so interesting, what about exotic? Are you guys still, do you guys still have me?
Yeah, we're still here.
So my screen got weird for a second. So the exotic pet rescue must be outrageous. And so we looked at some of the wildlife rescue that was right around us. And, you know, we have, you know, the Tennessee Smoky Mountain Bear Rescue. We have a wild bald eagle rescue. And then we also have, there is elephant rescue at the elephant sanctuary, but that's much farther away. And then we also have Tiger Haven, which is only 20 minutes away from us. Tiger Haven is home to over 300 big cats, over 175 tigers.
Oh.
And they hadn't really done any media outreach. They hadn't really had many filmmakers there. So we just asked them through our connections at the UT College of Veterinary Medicine, if we might meet up with the people who run Tiger Haven, and they made the introduction and they were open to it. So we started just doing a story about Tiger Haven, and that is pretty fascinating. And those ladies, you know, are spending, dedicating their entire life to a species that would gladly knock them to the ground and take a chomp out of them if they gave them a chance. So
yeah, they're feisty over there, and I love it. I love it.
It's pretty fascinating. And then that led to the bigger picture. You know, I think, you know, we started asking more questions, and then I guess we never would have dreamed that we would one day, you know, be on a flight to India and you know, be able to be working with, you know, some of the top international tiger conservationists. So, so that's really the long answer as to how it came about, but it was really a very, very small local project that turned out to be much larger in scope. And thanks to our executive producer, who was able to sort of help us, you know, make that journey.
You know, talking with Tim just a second ago, and he was talking about all the shots that were in this, and it is truly a gorgeous documentary.
Oh my gosh.
What you guys did was stunning. How long did this take to put together?
That's a great, great question. So, you know, active filming between Tiger Haven and two trips to India, as well as Nepal, as well as our executive producer, Elizabeth, going to the UK to interview Belinda. About 5 years of principal photography and probably 2 or 3 years of post-production. But no, that's not all full time. That's just, you know, when we could around other projects. And actually, to what Tim said too, like, there are people who go and do safari after safari after safari and never see wild tigers. We were really just lucky. So, you know, we sought out the best guides. We went to the places at the right time of year when we were most likely to, when the grass is the lowest and we're the most likely to see them. And we just lucked out. You know, it was only two trips to India, one trip to Nepal. And then also there's a lot of other great filmmakers who allowed us to use some of their footage too, but we did get lucky. Like, you know, that's not the norm. So hopefully, you know, big cats were sort of, they knew we were on their side.
It's the filming itself and the photos are just, they sock you right in the face in the best way possible, because you just sit there. I sat there with my mouth open, just going,
I was just gonna say that.
Oh,
I like, we had a chance that, you know, because, you know, we don't have a deal with a television network. So we had a chance to, you know, let you experience what a real sighting is. And not have music underneath it. And you just hear us, of course, taking 1,000 pictures and me telling everyone to be still so that it doesn't shake the camera. But that kind of feeling is really, you know, pretty close to what it's like. So it was nice to be able to include that. And I'm glad you guys appreciated it.
Oh, I was very jealous. I'll be honest. I was undeniably jealous. I was just like, oh, I want to do that. And they're so lucky and I want to be there. And it just makes you want to, the impact is made. You want to preserve tigers and their habitats in the wild because you want to one day experience that just for yourself. Like, just, it made me just want to be like, okay, how soon can I book a flight and how much is that going to cost me? And I've got all of my vaccinations and what do I need to, you know, to get over there?
Yeah.
It's such a huge impact. It just, I can't, I can barely communicate it.
I know we'll be watching this one over and over and over again.
We'll be sharing it with friends and family anytime we have people over. We'll be like, we're going to walk and watch this documentary.
Oh, I can see it now. You know, somebody walks in and says something about a big cat, and you're like, sit your butt down. We're watching this right now.
I love it. I hope one of the side effects is that people do get on a plane and go to India and Nepal. There's, it's very inexpensive once you get there. The flights right now aren't that bad. And the tourism economy around tigers is part of the solution to getting more habitat. You know, wherever there's tourists, there's park rangers and there's enforcement going on, and those tigers have a much better chance of not being poached. So, tourism is a huge part of it. So, hey, let's, if you're thinking about going to India, do it. If you're thinking about going to Nepal, go. You won't regret it.
It's absolutely
a transformative experience. Yeah.
Are you kidding me? I'm sending him an email and I'm asking Michael, what do I got to do here?
So speaking of,
we'll add it to our website for sure.
Okay, there you go. Yeah.
Speaking of people watching the documentary, where can people view this? Because it is going to drop on October 5th in 2021.
That sounds like a long way away. That's Tuesday.
I know it's Tuesday.
Well, this will be pre-recorded. So
this is pre-recorded. Yep, and it'll
going to be very soon. So
yes, this will drop on a Saturday, and so in just Sunday, Monday. So in about 2 or 3 days, y'all can be watching this. But they need to know where.
Yeah. So right now it's traditional video on demand, and that's places like iTunes, Apple TV, Amazon, Google Play, Vimeo on Demand, Vudu, one I haven't even heard of, Vubiquity, and I might be saying that wrong. And then also Charter and Comcast on Demand. So it rolls out in those places where you pay to see it. And then the better it does hopefully it catches on and we'll start to probably in a couple of weeks know which subscription-based services like Netflix and Hulu will pick it up. So. But for now, it's these traditional video on demand platforms.
Jump on it, people. It's worth everything that you, whatever, it's worth it.
Yeah, if you have a streaming service, just queue it up.
It's worth it. It's worth the 47, 48 minutes that you get to sit and eat popcorn and watch tigers and, share with your friends and family. It's worth it. Yeah. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, that's the best thing people could do is watching the film, leaving reviews is really important. You guys know, that's the name of the game. But sharing the links and sharing the social media, man, we're in these narrow silos now because of the algorithms of social media. So you got to work extra hard at it. And it's a challenge to get the word out. We don't have a massive marketing budget. We're just hoping that organizations like Big Cat Rescue, which has always been so generous in sharing information about the film, and all the other NGOs and sanctuaries in the film are able to get the word out to their people. And lasting change can come about.
Let's do it, people. Let's get this change made and get the, get this word out, get the documentary going, get the tigers saved. And
So the second question we had on here, how can everyday people all over the world follow the wild tiger population? Is there somewhere where people that are just starting to have the itch of, I want to help, what could they do? Where could they see this population? Where could they see projections, things like that?
Yes. Yeah, so probably the best answer to that, so most of, I want to say a large percentage of the NGOs that are doing work for wild tigers are included in the film, and links to their tiger initiatives would be on our website, thehiddentiger.com. Sorry, the shameless self-promotion, but so World Wildlife Federation, the TX2 initiative, the effort to double the population of wild tigers, that is a cross NGO, cross country initiative. So I would say either go to our website or Google WWFTX2. That's a great way to start, but really all the NGOs in the film, like Panthera and WWF and IFAW, they're all doing their part. They're all doing fantastic work. We just were able to, shine a tiny light on the fantastic work that's being done.
That's great. We'll make sure that, you know, those links are included so people know where to go. They can click on them very easily. I think, let's see where we're at.
Yeah, we'll put a little pop-up on YouTube. So so if you're watching right now, click that.
Yeah, that, or then, wherever it may be.
And then just listen to our voices, because let's be honest, none of us are doing song and dances here.
At least I've got a tiger behind me.
You do have a tiger.
We have a graphic.
Yeah, tiger. You've got a graphic. That's good.
We've got a pixel. Wait, what is this? What is pixelated?
You're gonna have to ask Carol. That's
okay.
Yeah, that's her tiger. I guess the last question on here. You want to take it?
Yeah. So I think I know
what it is. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I know you do. I know you're working on a ton of other projects. I know you've got a lot on your plate, so we're not going to keep you very long. And I just, before we get to this last question, thank you so much. Thank you so much for introducing this into my life. I feel honestly, and this is not like just hollow praise. This is, I feel like a better person for watching this documentary. I truly do. It makes me feel like, just by being a part of the documentary, by watching it, but also having that connection to Big Cat Rescue, whether it's small or large, it makes me feel like I am helping. And it makes me feel like all of the things that I'm doing are going towards the greater good. So thank you so much for that, because it really just, it makes the hard days a little bit easier. And it makes the days when you're like, it feels hopeless, it makes you feel like there's hope, and it's not false hope. It's actual hope. So thank you for that.
I'll just follow up on that.
That's good to hear. Thank you for what you guys do. We got a very dim view of the, we started to get rather hopeless about the prospects of wild tigers, but these hardened conservationists in India and Nepal who've been at it and have almost all the more reason to be cynical are really hopeful. So there's good science, there's good NGOs, there's good work being done. So there's reason to be hopeful.
And I'd like to follow up here is that, the people that have listened to myself and Bridge along the way, and anybody that's going to be listening to this, I want to thank you for making a documentary that was honest, that didn't, there were points in it where I was taken back, because, the whole PC culture that we live in today would not have done X, Y, or Z, because it would have gone against some grain. And as you said before, you don't have some big network controlling this, so you're able to do what you want to do. And so really, truly, thank you for being honest with the whole approach here. And, selecting people to speak, or bringing people in that wanted to speak, that actually wanted to bring the truth to the table, because it's been hampered so much by this whole, you can't say that, you can't do this. And you guys also cut through a lot of the junk that stands in the way.
It's hampered by the people who have the money, who have the cubs, who won't let the truth be told, because it will cost them so much. It will cost them financially. And so those people have a lot of interest in how things are portrayed in the media. And so it's great that we have you guys to be like, no, this is actually what's happening. So thank you for that. But again, we'll let you get to your next project. But our final question of the evening, do you have any domestic cats that you live with? If so, how many? Wow, we are batting 1,000 here on Cat Chat.
Come here. Come here. Come here, Huey. So we're come here, Huey. Let's see if I can show you my guys. Come here. Come here. Oh, there's Barkley. Let me just see if I can.
So camera. Any of you that are listening, if you go to the YouTube channel, they can't see
it. So
I think I saw a fluffy dog.
Yeah. So we've got four dogs right now. We had a cat panther. He passed away a few years ago. And now we have a dog that's a little bit, our border collie, who's a little bit insane. So it's hard for us to have cats. But my mom has two cats. One of them is named Tiger. So we do still get to spend time with domestic house cats. I grew up with house cats, love cats, love dogs, love all animals. But just a bunch of dogs right now.
That's fair. Awesome. Dogs are good too. We like dogs too.
Michael.
Yeah, we skunked you. Nobody.
I know. I was like, we're batting 1,000 here. Nobody. Yeah. I'm like, let's
50% had dogs.
Where's Marzipan?
Marzipan's over there sleeping.
We lost Marzipan. All right.
But Michael, thank you very much for setting this up. And obviously thank you for the documentary, but you know, getting the people, you know, to come on in, you know, John, Carson, Tim, they're all awesome. Thank you for letting them have their time to, you know, preach their gospel.
And thank you so much for being a part of this, because I know, again, I know you're busy and I know you've got a lot going on, especially getting ready for this to drop on Tuesday, October 5th. People, get on it, watch it, stream it, download it, like just get it in your system.
Yeah, if you can't figure out where to go to find it, go to thehiddentiger.com. And I'm pretty sure there's going to be directions there.
I think so.
Yes. We're updating as we speak. So, all right. Well, thank you guys. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Have a great evening. And we look forward to much success for this documentary. And I can't wait to see the outcome.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
All right. So there you have it, everybody. That was a ride of epic proportions. And it is, I mean, again, we cannot, we cannot express this enough. Just get yourself, you know, comfortable on your couch, get your snacks, get your beverages, and just be prepared for 48 minutes of unbelievable footage and of just amazing things to come. So check out the Hidden Tiger documentary. It will be dropping Tuesday, October 5th, 2021. Get on it, get ready for it, and you know, go to the bathroom beforehand, because you're not going to want to miss a second of it. I realize now we can pause things, but just,
yeah, it's you're not going to want,
you're not going to want to move.
It's very hard to explain. It's captivating. It really is.
Yeah.
It's something that sucks you in. But big thank you to Michael for putting this interview together for us. We wouldn't have been able to do it without you.
Carol for facilitating that relationship. So thank you to you as well.
You know, Tim and Carson and John, thank you very, very much. We'll be reaching out to each of you at some point here.
Look forward to seeing what happens in the future.
Holy smokes.
I know.
That was something. Well,
it's big.
If you haven't clicked that subscribe button down below, click that subscribe button if you're watching us on video. If you're listening to us over podcast, subscribe to that too. Yeah, leave us a good review, please. That's always a good thing. Keeps the ball rolling, and maybe play it in the car for your friends. Have them listen to it and pass it around, right? Definitely with the Hidden Tiger, grab whoever you can, plop their butts on the couch, and say, you need to watch this, and then throw them a tissue box and maybe watch it with them, or run out the door. One or the other, you know.
Watch it with them many times.
It's such a great film.
Yeah, it's really amazing. So, I mean, I've seen it twice and I'm still blown away.
Yeah.
So, but another podcast coming in a couple of weeks. So stay tuned for that. And we'll have another exciting guest to talk to with you guys on Cat Chat with Big Cat Rescue. We are Bridget and Andy, and we'll catch up with you guys again later. Have a good one.
Bye.